to maybe come around.
Peggy Lee and Black Coffee ending tonight's sequence of Words and Music. The readers were Peter Marinka and Hattie Morahan, and the programme was produced by Natalie Steed. And a reminder that you can find the full playlist of all of tonight's poetry and music on the Radio 3 website at bbc.co.uk/radio3/words and music. And Words and Music is all one word.
BBC One's flagship arts programme, Imagine, profiles veteran writer and publisher Diana Attill.
She once wrote, "An editor must never expect thanks. We must always remember that we are only midwives. If we want praise for progeny, we must give birth to our own."
Alan Yentob reflects on her life and career.
Well, I was thinking about boys and sex and love more than anybody else, and I was sort of rather careful not to show that.
Imagine, this Tuesday night at 10:35 on BBC One.
This is BBC Radio 3. We're broadcasting between 90 and 93 FM. We're also on digital radio, and you'll find us on the World Wide Web. And the time now is coming up to a minute and a half past midnight. It's time for Jazz Lineup next, which is presented this evening by Kevin Legendre.
Hello. A slightly shorter programme this week that features an interview I did recently with vocalist Bobby McFerrin, the grand master of spontaneous invention. We talk in depth about his new album Vocabularies, as well as his renowned concerts. But fear not, I'll just have time to squeeze a few new but essential jazz releases into the mix too. Indeed, to get things started, we have music by John McLaughlin, a man who helped to redefine jazz guitar back in the 70s with two groundbreaking groups, Mahavishnu and Shakti. Ever mindful of numbers, McLaughlin has a new band, The Fourth Dimension, and a new CD, To The One. This is the title track featuring the leader on guitar synthesizer.
Thank you.
John McLaughlin's To The One, the title track of his new album featuring Gary Husband on drums and keyboards, Etienne Mbappe on bass guitar, and McLaughlin on guitar synthesizer in a slightly Matheny-ish mode. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Kevin Legendre. Time for another disc now, which is also very much in the spirit of internationalism, or great proof of the fact that jazz is a universal language. Phrenesis is a London-based trio, but it's led by the Danish bassist Jasper Højby and features the pianist Ivo Neem and American drummer Mark Juliana. They have a new album called Alive, recorded in concert at the Forge Arts venue in London, and it's every bit as good as their previous offering, Green Delay. Here's a track called Abraham's New Gift. Thank you. Led by the Danish bassist Jasper Højby, who also composes all the music, that is the group Phronesis and a track called Abraham's New Gift. It's from their new CD Alive, and you'll find that on Edition Records, the label run by Dave Stapleton, which is fast amassing a catalogue to be reckoned with. OK, from three people to one person, but no ordinary person. He is Bobby McFerrin, arguably one of the great contemporary jazz singers, but also an incredible musician, period, who can use his whole body as well as a very complex microphone technique to recreate a band on stage. I caught up with Mr. McFerrin in London during his recent Barbican concert, and we began by talking about his new album Vocabularies, his first in 9 years. I wondered why he'd been out of the studio for so long.
I'm not crazy about being in the studio. I like live performance. I like improvisation. Recording is difficult for me. I find the environment very sterile.
Let's focus on Vocabularies, because I suppose the exciting thing for me is that there's a new name involved, somebody who I hadn't heard of before, called Roger Treese, who produces and also plays and sings as well.
First time we met, he was a college student in Greeley, Colorado, and he picked me up from the airport and took me to my hotel. Then we met again maybe 10 years ago with the idea of doing a project together. This album, Vocabularies, actually took about 8 years to do, partly because of my touring schedule, partly because Roger spent a couple of years just experimenting with pieces, with arrangements, going into the Voicestra archives and finding live concerts that we had done together and making pieces out of them or choosing motifs that he wanted to develop. So a lot of it was, there was a long period of gathering musical information and then committing it to paper. He would have me come into the studio and sing a bunch of things and sing new bass lines for pieces, sing new melodies. But the end result is, you know, absolutely incredible. You know, he really, really captured, you know, the language, the rhythmic feels, the different musical cultural sensibilities and everything that I use when I'm improvising on stage. You know, I go on with just a whole bunch of musical information and just whatever comes out, it's just what it is. And while we were working on this project, I thought it was a good idea for Roger to sing with me in my group Voicestra. He's got a really nice bass voice, so I put him in the bass sections just so he could be around and observe and watch how I develop pieces and how I work. And he really captured the spirit of spontaneity. The way I develop circle singing. Circle songs is when, you know, I've got four groups of singers and I improvise and find a part for each group and then I assign it and they sing it and hold on to the part while I develop something else for another group to sing.
But you also have a lot of singers on this album as well.
We wanted to develop pieces that were specifically targeted and tailored for a cappella groups. And, you know, choral organizations, you know, different sizes, because I had gotten a lot of, you know, inquiries from choirs and a cappella groups, you know, as to when I was going to develop pieces for them to sing. And I thought one of the best ways to collaborate with other singers was to develop pieces for them, to write pieces for them. And so that's a major reason why there are a lot of singers on this album, from different backgrounds. You know, Janice Siegel from NN Transfer, Lisa Fisher, who does a lot of singing, works a lot with the Rolling Stones, you know. I don't even know all the singers that went into it. Everybody in Voicestra at one point participated on it. Joey Blake and Rhiannon and David Worm, who were members of Voicestra, participated. And a lot of the singers I didn't know. You know, this was Roger with his producer hat on, you know, making phone calls and bringing all these singers in.
Yeah.
We wanted a large choral sound, you know, and I think there's about 50 singers on the album altogether, something like that. I think it's a beautiful, beautiful project.
Thank you.
That was Wailers from Bobby McFerrin's fine new album Vocabularies, which sees McFerrin at times playing the Cecil B. DeMille of jazz. There are no fewer than 23 singers, 2 percussionists, and on one track, 2,500 audience members from Bergen, Norway. So a difficult group to keep on the road, but of course every audience is the next Bobby McFerrin band. We went on to discuss another piece from the album Vocabularies, and the song in question is called Messages. There are many languages from around the world used in the lyric, so the piece has a very universal flavour. But was that the way it was originally planned?
I've never had an agenda. You know, when people say, well, what's your agenda? What is it that you're trying to accomplish? What do you hope, you know, to be doing as an artist? If I have any agenda, it's simply the agenda of joy. I want people to feel joyful, to feel full when they leave. You know, I'm not out to teach people what I do or my technique or why I do what I do. I just know that the greatest compliment after a concert is not, wow, how do you do what you do and your technique is so fascinating and blah, 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 blah. It's not that. It's, I feel so good. You know, I feel different. Then I know that my gift has been used.
Well, I read somewhere there was another musician who said after hearing Charlie Parker's music for the first time, it made me feel so good.
First time I saw Miles Davis play, I was my whole molecular structure had been altered. I remember walking out of the club, and I don't think
you must have levitated.
I was going to say, I don't think my feet touched ground for 2 weeks, because I had never heard music like that. The band was Keith Jarrett on piano, Jack DeJohnette on drums, Ayrton on percussion, Michael Henderson on bass, Gary Bartz on soprano sax, you know. And Miles, of course, wearing a black outfit, playing a black trumpet, hooked up to a wah-wah pedal. My whole musical life was never the same after that. It altered all of my ideas about what music was, what it was for, what you do with it, why it was. I had so many questions after that. I think my mind was so full that it just sent me in a completely different direction. I think it was at that moment I realized that I didn't want to be a composer anymore. I didn't want to put music on paper. I didn't want to commit anything on paper anymore. I wanted to just fly. And after that, you know, it was all about improv, you know, things that happen only one time. To me, that's one of the most beautiful things about improv, the things that happen only once and they never happen again, unless you record it and decide to develop it into a piece or something like that. I was 19 years old. My musical hero at the time was a composer by the name of David Grusin. Dave Grusin. He was all over the musical map. You know, you go to the movies, and his name was the soundtrack. You'd turn on the television, and there was his name. Right, you know, he wrote the theme for this particular TV show. So I opened up the Musicians Union book, and I found his name and his phone number, and I called the phone number, and I said, you know, I introduced myself. You know, my name is Bobby McFerrin, and I'm a composition student at California State University, Sacramento, and I'd be interested in talking to him. She says, well, I'll leave him a message. Well, lo and behold, 3 days later, he actually called me, and he asked me a whole bunch of questions about myself. And he says, well, bring your compositions down. Let me take a look at them. And that began a friendship to this day. You know, we still know each other. We still talk on the phone. We hang out. We've done some gigs together now. He picks me up at the airport whenever I fly into Albuquerque, you know, to do a gig or whatever. And how that changed my life. I mean, here was somebody who was really, really busy, really active, a well-known composer, arranger, you know, took the time to call a 19-year-old college student, invite him to his studio for me to share my compositions with him and for him to give me, you know, ideas. That had a profound effect on me as a young person. And so I try as best as I can to remember these two instances where my life was completely altered, you know, the generosity of a person who was really busy, and then also the generosity of watching musicians on stage, deeply listening to one another and where the music was going, and gently putting in their part and guiding the music, you know, never arrogant or bullying, you know. It was always just sort of like a very soft but deep leading of the music. And I was completely altered, you know, and that's why I do what I do.
You involve audiences as well when you perform. There's always that moment where you invite people on stage, or there's a certain generosity of spirit there as well.
I'm just about positive that 90% of the audience wants to participate. All of them have had dreams of maybe being a musician. Maybe they didn't finish their piano lessons and wish that they had, you know. Maybe there are some who, you know, maybe even do what I do, but they don't do it in front of people. And all of a sudden they see me doing it on stage, and they say, well, I can do that, and I do that all the time. Or to me, those are my favorite moments, is when I'm surprised by the audience. You know, an individual comes up on stage to sing with me and blows everybody away because they're just so talented, you know. And this is an opportunity for people to get a chance to hear someone with a really talented voice. So I like to give people opportunities just to express themselves, to be open and just to sing and to have fun. And to me, the stage is like my second home, and the audience are my guests, and I invite them to just hang out with me and just have a joyful time.
Part of the track Messages from the album Vocabularies by Bobby McFerrin, who I recently interviewed. I also asked him about being on stage alone and without instruments. How does that actually feel?
I've been doing this now for, let's see, I guess I did my first solo concert when I was, I must have been about 33. I'm 60, so we're talking almost 30 years. I'm very comfortable. I'm not nervous at all, you know. I know what I'm doing. I know that when I walk out there and sit on a chair, I just open up my mouth and watch the music come out. When I was younger and starting to do this, I used to try and manipulate everything. You know, I used to try and guide the music. I thought I should know where it should go, but now I'm basically just following it. So it's an adventure. I never really know how things are going to end up.
Going back to Vocabularies, what's striking is that there are some great musicians on it. Alex Acuna, Once of Weather Report, and Joe Zawinul. I wondered how that changed things for Bobby McFerrin to actually have musicians around him.
Musician to me means your instrument is either your, it can be your voice. Your instrument is your body, right? I make no distinction of musician being someone who plays an instrument. I play an instrument. I play the voice. So if I'm working with other singers or other musicians, my role is basically just to listen as best as I can and find out what the music's all about. My musical education is really vast. I mean, my parents were both classically trained musicians who loved jazz. And when I started singing, I first started with piano bars, and I lived in New Orleans for a while and worked with a group called the Astral Project, which to me was an eye-opening experience because someone in the band would call a tune, and we'd start the tune in a particular key with a particular tempo, and 20 minutes later it'd be in another key, in a whole nother feel, in a whole nother tempo. And I thought, oh, wow, okay, you can do this with music. You can start the key of C and end up in the key of F sharp. You can start, you know, with a shuffle, and then it can end up, you know, just something completely out of your mind crazy, you know, just completely atonal and whatever. And this group used to play like that, and it was a great education for me because I didn't really know how to do that when I was just starting out because, you know, just coming off of piano bars where you pretty much, you know, play the song the same way, even though I was always improvising and stuff, you know, instead of taking piano solos, I take vocal solos in the pieces. It depends on the musicians, too. I mean, I love playing with Chick Corea, for example. We do a lot of duo work together. Chick and Jack DeJohnette and I did some trio gigs together, and that was fun, you know. Very, very challenging and difficult for the audience because we decided that we were going to improvise for 90 straight minutes without stopping, which was a challenge not only for us but for the audience to sit there and listen to all the stuff we were just spewing out, you know. I was like turning on a faucet and letting it run for 90 minutes, you know. Really, really challenging, dangerous in a way. Mm.
Bobby McFerrin improvising with Chick Corea on the album Rendezvous in New York. I wrapped up our interview by broaching the subject of scat singing and beatboxing. I pointed out that the much-loved hip-hop band The Roots had a couple of great beatboxers who at times used their voices in a similar way to Bobby McFerrin. Does he see beatboxing as part of the lineage of scat singing at all?
It's not a far stretch of the imagination for me to think that, you know, that what I do, what they do is a lineage of what I do, and what I do is a lineage, you know, partly from something that happened before me. You know, anytime someone is trying to do anything with their voice to create sounds, moods, emotions, whether it's through rhythm or melody, harmony, whatever it is, vocally, to me, it's connected in some kind of way. I don't claim it for myself. I've just heard. I've heard this. One time, I was parking my car. I guess I have to tell a story. I was parking my car. I have an appointment with one of my doctors. You know. About, you know, just a checkup, and I drive to the valet parking, and all the people that are working in the parking lot are black, and as I get out of the car, one of the older guys says, hey everybody, you know who this is, you know, and I thought he was going to say, you know, this is the guy, don't worry, be happy, and stuff like that, and, you know, I'm just thinking, okay, here we go, don't worry, be happy again, and the guy says, this is one of the fathers of hip-hop, and I couldn't believe it. I could not, I mean, my jaw dropped because I never thought of that. I mean, that never came into my head. I personally don't believe it.
I believe it.
I don't spend any time with the hip-hop crowd. I don't really do much in that world at all. So that's why I was really, really flabbergasted and befuddled by that comment. I had no, when he said that, I was just stunned.
Say,
The Garden, taken from Bobby McFerrin's album Vocabularies, out on Rasa Records, with Bobby taking the lead line in front of that astonishing chorus. And for your information, he also has to be one of the most youthful, fittest 60-year-olds I've ever met. You can catch all or part of that interview again by going to the BBC Radio 3 homepage at bbc.co.uk/radio3, then go to Jazz Lineup and follow the links to the Listen Again feature. It will be up there for the next 7 days. We just have time to end with a couple of tracks. Firstly, we have the American trombonist Steve Davis, who you may know from his work with Chick Corea. Well, Davis's new album is called Eloquence, and he leads a fine quartet featuring another late great pianist, Hank Jones. The piece is a great way to remember him. It was composed by Jones, and it's called Minor Contention. Thank you. Steve Davis's minor contention from the album Eloquence. The piece was written by the late, great Hank Jones, who played piano. Nat Reeves was on double bass, Joe Farnsworth on drums, and there were two very special guests, trumpeter Roy Hargrove and vibraphonist Steve Nelson. So to our last disc. It's called Interspirit, and it's the unusual pairing of two bass players. From America, Anthony Jackson, and from Greece, Yorgis Fakanas. The recording also features jazz fusion heavyweights such as drummer Dave Weckl, yet another former Chick Corea band member, guitarist Frank Gambale, and keyboard player Mitch Foreman. Here's a version of Wayne Shorter's timeless standard Footprints that also showcases the talent of two Greek horn players, Antonis Andriou on trombone and Takis Paterelis on soprano sax.
Thank you.
Footprints by Anthony Jackson and Yorgos Fakanas from their album Interspirit, which is out now on the Abstract Logics label. That's it for this week. Claire Martin is back in the chair next week with an astonishing piano duet set from two virtuosi, Gwilym Simcock and Aaron Goldberg. Jazz on 3 tomorrow night has music from Troika, one of the UK's most exciting young bands, recorded at the Cheltenham Jazz Festival. So lots for you to look forward to. Till next time, from me, Kevin Legendre, bye-bye.
Hello, I'm John Shea, and this is Music Through the Night on BBC Radio 3. In this part of the programme, we're going back to the 16th century. The 2009 Proms Chamber Music Series at Cadogan Hall began with a concert by the Cardinals Music and their conductor Andrew Carwood, celebrating 500 years since Henry VIII came to the throne. Music and the arts flowered during his reign, and in this first group, the second of the three pieces is a Gloria from a Mass by Robert Fairfax. The last is a lament by William Cornish the Younger. A lover tells a passing robin of his sadness at his lady's unkindness to him. But first, a well-known song by the king himself.